seated. James L. Leach, Mr. Cohen, Mr. Smith, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Smith, good to see you.
Good to see you, Judge.
Here, is there any rebuttal?
Just 5 minutes, Judge. Just fine.
Glad to hear from you.
Judge, may it please the court, I'm Stephen K. Smith. I represented Mr. Diggs at the trial of this matter. I really don't have anything in addition to my brief. I know that Mr. Campbell has cited Howells versus Fields in his brief that briefly I would like to address. And as the court knows, that case had to do with I believe police officers interrogating someone who was already incarcerated, and Mr. Campbell, I guess, makes the argument that being incarcerated is somehow worse than being in a mental institution or a behavioral center. I would respectfully disagree with that. I certainly think that, and I continue to stand by my...
let me interrupt you. I guess we could debate about whether you're in custody if you're in a mental hospital as opposed to a jail or a prison or a police interrogation room, but it seems to me that the more fundamental question is under Miranda. I think the law is pretty clear that Miranda is a charge-specific application. In other words, if you're in custody in jail on a different charge, that doesn't mean police can't ask you, provided they give you Miranda warnings, they can't ask you about your involvement in a totally unrelated offense. So, the mere fact that someone is even if you accept that this is the functional equivalent of a prison that you're or a jail and you're there under some sort of legal restraint based on being charged with a crime, see, even granting all that, I don't know how you get there. Maybe you can enlighten me as to how you get there from here, given that it's pretty clear, it seems to me, that unlike the Sixth Amendment right to counsel, where, if you're awaiting trial, it doesn't matter if the police are going to ask you about something else, but the Miranda right to counsel is very, very different and much more narrow on its application.
With this, I just think that the spirit of the Fifth Amendment and also Miranda just certainly would require more. If we allow a procedure to go on that happened in this case, and quite frankly, I've been practicing law 28 years, I can't remember, I'm sure it happens every day, but I can't remember an instance where police officers went into a behavioral center, really did not, the record's clear that he asked staff.
Would you agree your client was committed by order of the magistrate for an unsuccessful suicide attempt?
So that's
he hadn't
correct.
Committed any crime.
That's correct.
So I guess, explain to me how he's in custody in a way that Miranda would apply.
Well, certainly I go to that particular hospital. I'm familiar with the layout for commitment hearings and other matters. You cannot leave. He did.
Well, all that, but he did. He's not suspected of a crime.
Well,
he hasn't committed a crime. Miranda apply at all?
I certainly think that you have an individual that recently tried to commit suicide. It's clear from the record that he was on some type of psychotropic medication through the hospital. Those questions were never asked.
They're not law enforcement folks. They're not agents of the police, are they?
But I would respectfully submit, I think that certainly think this opens the door up for police officers and detectives to be, unfortunately, purposefully lazy in asking their questions of individuals. The police officer really asked him nothing as far as, was he on any type of medication? I don't believe he asked him how far he'd gone in school. When was the last time he was medicated?
Two separate issues. One is whether it was custodial interrogation, meaning that they have to Mirandize him. And the other separate, totally separate issue is whether he was competent to make the statement. And they're two separate issues.
Well, I would agree with that, but I certainly do think that a person similarly situated to Mr. Diggs, and he indicated that in his testimony, that he did not feel that he was free to go and that he had to answer the questions. And he, quite frankly, told Detective Benjamin that he didn't feel of course, that there's a conflict in the evidence with regard to that, the testimonies, but that he did not feel comfortable in answering his questions. Certainly, I think at that particular point, that should have triggered something in the detective that, you know, this man should be afforded his Miranda warnings, and I certainly...
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I'd actually like to just jump straight to issue number three, which in the Commonwealth's perspective is maybe the hardest issue for us, but and that is the issue of whether or not the evidence was sufficient that the victim in this case met the statutory definition of someone who is mentally incapacitated. As you know, the statute says that the mental health of the victim has to prevent that victim from understanding the nature or consequences of the sexual act.
Basically, the situation is you're of such a mental condition that you simply can't consent. And I gather the Commonwealth's relying here on the fact that there's evidence in the record that she had the mental capacity of a 10-year-old, and we certainly recognize that 10-year-olds can't consent to the act of sexual intercourse.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is...
In the bottom line here, in terms of mental incapacity, at the time of the act,
yes, Your Honor.
And there's testimony all over the place that at this point in time, or that point in time, she sometimes didn't understand the questions of the scene nurse at the hospital. But the issue to me is whether or not at the time of the intercourse, whether she was mentally incapacitated, not knowing the consequence of her act. Is that a fair principle?
Right. Right. And you have to look at the evidence in the totality. So you look at the confluence of IQ and mental age and the adaptive skills. And I recognize that there was testimony that she couldn't live on her own, she couldn't get a job, and that sort of thing. The evidence...
She graduated high school. She had a limited curriculum.
Right, and she would have to go to adult daycare, and those sort of things. And specifically at the time of the act, I would point to the defendant's testimony when he is talking to the officer, and not to be crude, but he is... telling the officer that he was trying to consummate the sexual act, he was unable to penetrate the victim. I think a reasonable fact finder could find that suggests that the victim in this case perhaps didn't understand the nature of the sexual act, giving her mental age. I'm sorry. Given that the defendant repeatedly tried to engage in sexual relations with this victim and he was unable to do so, I think that is suggestive that the victim in this case didn't understand the nature of the sexual act at the time.
I think that's kind of a speculative stretch if you ask me, but...
It's
certainly a possibility, but I don't know if the evidence necessarily requires that specifically.
But if we believe that, we have to reverse the conviction, don't we, based on the statement? That the fact that he couldn't consummate the act indicated that she didn't know...
She didn't understand the nature of the sexual act. Now, I don't think we would reverse. I think that shows that her mental... capacity that she didn't understand the nature of sex. But even if that's not enough, I understand.
Is it a question of whether she knew the nature of the act? Because, I mean, most 10-year-olds can sort of appreciate in the abstract, you know, what the act of sex involves, whether they understand every implication of it or not is another question. But the issue is simply whether you have, either by your chronological age or your mental age, you have the capacity to legitimately consent to it.
Right, and the statute says, understanding the nature or consequences of the sexual act. That's what the statutory language says. Does she understand the ability to consent? Is that a component? I guess so. And given the fact that there was this lack of sexual response from the victim, perhaps she didn't understand the nature of consent. But turning back to Judge Franken, you said that we have this statement that she's making to the same nurse, which is right after the sexual act. The Commonwealth's position would be that is evidence that this victim didn't understand the consequences of the sexual act. Not so much the nature, maybe she understood the nature, but maybe she didn't understand the consequences, because the same nurse testified that she wasn't able to really answer questions about that the same nurse was asking her during the evaluation, and she would answer inappropriately. I mean, I think that right there is, when you combine that with her mental age, her lack of adaptive skills, that's enough for the trial court to reasonably find that this victim had a mental incapacity under the statute. I recognize that this case is not as robust as the sort of the handful of cases that we have on this subject. And I kind of describe them as a spectrum. We have on one end, we have Sanford, which was clearly this victim in that case, could not consent and did not understand the nature of the sexual act, because the victim in that case had the functional equivalent of a 4-year-old and did not understand sex whatsoever. And then on the other end of the spectrum,
consequences of the sexual act?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're saying, but as long as she understood the nature, then the conviction
was
good? I'm not following that.
No, the statute says it's in the disjunctive. It's either the nature or the consequences. So if we prove either one of those, that she didn't understand the nature or she didn't understand the consequences, that's enough for a conviction under the statute. And as I was saying, we have these cases like Atkins and White on the other end of the spectrum. And the issue...
Tell me the facts that indicate that she understood the nature.
I'm not sure she did understand the nature, given her lack of sexual response. I'm just saying, assuming that she did understand the nature, that a 10-year-old might understand that, but we just don't know. The evidence...
So where are we? If the evidence isn't clear that she understood the nature and you're conceding that she doesn't understand the consequences, what's left for us to do other than reverse and dismiss it?
If she doesn't understand, she's the victim. If she doesn't understand the consequences, that's an affirmance. Because that's what we have to prove, is that this...
That's the definition of mental incapacity.
That's the definition of mental incapacity. That's the issue.
I guess you're relying on a condition that prevents the plaintiff from understanding either the nature or the consequence.
Yes.
What you said, sorry.
No, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear enough, Your Honor. But as I was saying, there's been a spectrum of these cases. There is Sanford on one end and Atkins and White on the other. And the issue is, where does this fit in? Is this closer to Sanford? Is this closer to White or Atkins? And it's Connell's position, given the victim's mental age, which was at best a 10-year-old, even though she's 25 years old, her lack of adaptive skills, her lack of being able to support herself, and all the sorts of health problems that she had, her psychiatrist testified that it does affect her ability to make decisions. And the fact that we have around the same time of this act, right immediately afterwards, she's unable to really explain to the same nurse what happened. that a reasonable fact finder could conclude that the evidence was sufficient, that the defendant took advantage of the victim's mental incapacity in this case. I will just touch upon a couple of the other issues in the case. I think clearly this defendant...
What about when yes. She was asked whether she was a virgin and she said no? How does that apply to her understanding?
I believe that came from the defendant's testimony. And I don't think, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that we can rely on the defendant's self-serving statement.
It seems to me that if she understood what a virgin was and what a virgin wasn't, she would have some understanding about the sexual act.
I understand that, Your Honor, but that only came from the defendant's testimony, and we would submit that that is not viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth if you are relying on something that the defendant had said, especially given the fact that his statements on this throughout this trial were completely inconsistent, given what he told the officer and then about his attempt to have sex with this victim, and then he goes to trial and says, no, we only kissed. And I just would think we would not be able to rely upon the defendant's own statements. Quickly, I think the evidence was clearly that the defendant was not in custody for purposes of Miranda. Did cite Howes v. Fields, I think, which is fairly on point. I don't think there's really much of a distinction between being in a mental health facility as opposed to being in a jail or prison. This is a case where the officer told him that he was not under arrest. He didn't have to talk to him. He wasn't handcuffed. All of these factors weigh in favor that there was no custody for purposes of Miranda. As to whether or not the defendant's statement was voluntary, the trial court weighed all the relevant factors, what the defendant's intelligence, which the trial court noted seemed to be extremely intelligent, his experience with the criminal justice system, and the appellant makes a point that the officer didn't ask about the medication, but as the trial court noted, there was nothing in the record that suggests that the medication that the defendant may or may not have been on affected his ability or his judgment in making a statement to the officer. And the other issue in the case is whether or not the defendant had the criminal intent to commit the act of rape. That is simply just a facts and circumstance situation where I think the evidence is pretty overwhelming that the trial court could reasonably infer that the defendant had criminal intent given the physical evidence in this case and his own statements that he made to the officer. Unless the court has any other questions, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment below.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you.
You have just under 10 minutes left if you want to leave.
Judge, I would just follow up with regard to the assignment of error number 3 with regard to and just argue that certainly I do not think that the Commonwealth's evidence rose to the level to find that this alleged victim was suffering from a mental incapacity at the time of the alleged offense. I mean, the Commonwealth, as the court knows and sees through the record, introduced testimony of her particular psychiatrist. He did not see her on that particular day, and I believe that the evidence was that he had not even had an office meeting in his office in Norfolk with her maybe a couple of months prior to her being treated at Riverside Behavioral. He had no knowledge of what kind of treatment she was receiving there. And I think the mother had testified that her daughter had good days and bad days. So certainly it sounded from the evidence that her condition, whatever it was, I mean, we see what the diagnosis is, that it was not something that, stayed the same, but was she, again, had good days and bad days. In many ways, she went further in school than my client did. My client was a ninth grade. He went to the ninth grade. She graduated 12th grade at Lake Taylor High School. But I do not think that that the evidence in this particular case rose to the level of showing that this alleged victim suffered from mental incapacity at the time of the alleged offense. There was no one in court that could really, there was no one in court, no Commonwealth witness that testified as to what her mental incapacity was on this particular day that this offense is to allegedly happen. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We'll come down to Greek Council, and the court will stand adjourned until 9:30 in the morning.